You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Monday, January 3, 2022. Call me Naseby. Standards Organization's base contract is central to Winter Storm Uri litigation. Published by Rick Smead. In the aftermath of the massive winter storm Uri in February of last year and its impact on the natural gas industry, there has been a blizzard of civil and regulatory litigation. Whether it's someone not providing contracted gas supply, not taking expensive must-take gas supply, or saying not that contract, but this contract where there was a big difference in pricing between the two, lawyers are having a field day with the meaning of two words, force majeure. To what extent was one party to an agreement protected from being in breach of contract because their deal said some things could be force majeure or beyond their control? The purchase and sale of natural gas at issue in these contracts is overwhelmingly done through a standard-based contract produced by the North American Energy Standards Board, or NASB. In today's RBN blog, we discuss the standard contract used for the vast majority of natural gas supply deals in the U.S. and how its provisions relate to the issues raised by last February's deep freeze. Especially for folks in Texas, Winter Storm Uri was perhaps the most memorable event in a year full of real doozies. In fact, Terminal Frost, our blog on the gas market havoc that Uri caused, got more hits than any other blog we posted in 2021. Without rehashing the mayhem that came with the deep freeze, suffice to say that many elements of Texas's extensive gas and electric infrastructure failed to perform, mostly due to extreme frigid temperatures the likes of which few in the Lone Star State had experienced before. Gas demand spiked, gas supply tanked, due to well freeze-offs, pipeline operating problems, and, most importantly, power being cut to supply facilities. Wind turbines iced up and localized power interruptions morphed into a monstrous and sustained blackout affecting millions of customers. Put simply, it was a mess. And when systems fail like that, lots of consumers don't get their gas. Supply-demand imbalances spike prices to stratospheric levels, a huge state goes without power with disastrous consequences, and everyone looks to limit their losses or protect the massive profits they made. Enter the attorneys and their detailed reviews of what the contracts say and mean. Which brings us to NASB's base contract. Almost everyone uses it, and it contains the force majeure provision most often at issue in URI-related litigation. NASB, a voluntary membership organization, is the central business practice standards group of both the natural gas and electric industries and carries enormous clout in terms of setting the rules. NASB became the successor to the Gas Industry Standards Board, or GISB, when it was expanded to include wholesale electric, retail gas, and retail electric in 2002. The GISB, in turn, was created in 1995 to deal with dysfunction in the gas pipeline sector following the industry's restructuring by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, in 1993. Check out our Different Strokes series for more on how pipeline regulations have evolved. As the industry moved to a transportation-only model, with nominated transactions in far higher numbers than had ever been seen, then nomination processes and electronic bulletin boards, or EBBs, of individual pipeline companies were an ugly patchwork quilt of individual company systems. Some just didn't work to get gas flowing on a timely basis, and all of them required buyers and sellers to employ individual experts on each pipeline's tariff and EBB. The GISB was created for the industry to voluntarily standardize how things were done, and to recommend to FERC that those standards become formal rules, which is exactly what FERC did in its number 587 series of orders. Order 587 was issued in 1996, and its 25th major update and revision of FERC regulations was issued in July 2021. But enough of NASB's and GISB's regulatory history. This same group of participants from across the natural gas industry saw equal dysfunction in the contracting for short-term sales of natural gas. In a suddenly fast-moving industry, there were more short-term transactions than ever, and it was taking too long to get a deal done. So GISB embarked on creating a standard-based contract for short-term purchases and sales, defining all the terms, saying how the mechanics would work, and making it possible for each contract to be modified as needed by special conditions added by the parties, sort of like season to taste in barbecuing. Or for you financial folks, it's the energy equivalent of the ISDA Master Agreement from the International Swaps and Derivatives Association, or ISDA, used for derivatives transactions. This base contract, released for purchase by anyone who wanted to use it, was an instant success. It reduced the time for arranging a gas commodity transaction from a week or so to a few hours. The base contract was so successful that by 2000 to 2001, the contract was changed from a short-term standard contract to a standard contract for any purchase and sale of natural gas. Today, marketers, traders, producers, and gas buyers routinely refer to the NASB, meaning the agreements they executed using the base contract. It's achieved iconic status, sort of like the Beatles or Lady Gaga. The NASB base contract was different from NASB's work in the regulated transportation and transmission sectors, unlike those standards recommended to FERC that, when approved, become the law. The use of the base contract is voluntary. You have to buy it from NASB if you're not a member, and nobody, FERC included, makes you use it. And not only does FERC not require use of the base contract, but it has never been called on to interpret it. This means the provisions of each contract mean whatever they were intended to mean for the GSBY-NASB members who created them and the board members who approved the contract. Winter Storm Uri has made this interpretation more important than ever. If you failed to deliver or refused to take natural gas when prices went to hundreds of dollars per million BTUs and a major proportion of the production in Texas, Oklahoma, and elsewhere was unable to get to market, are you excused by force majeure or is a ton of money going to change hands? So, with that preamble, here's the standard force majeure provision in a NASB contract. The parties to a contract will sometimes include modifications or limitations to this provision in their special conditions, but that's a contract-by-contract issue. It's the folks who just depend on the standard-based contract provision itself who are spending a lot of time and money trying to see what they can or can't use in the language. Section 11. Force majeure. 11.1. Except with regard to a party's obligation to make payment due under Section 7 and imbalance charges under Section 4, neither party shall be liable to the other for failure to perform a firm obligation, to the extent such failure was caused by force majeure. The term force majeure as employed herein means any cause not reasonably within the control of the party claiming suspension, as further defined in Section 11.2. 11.2. Force majeure shall include but not be limited to the following. Number 1. Physical events such as acts of God, landslides, lightning, earthquakes, fires, storms or storm warnings, such as hurricanes, which result in evacuation of the affected area, floods, washouts, explosions, breakage or accident or necessity of repairs to machinery or equipment or lines of pipe. Number 2. Weather-related events affecting an entire geographic region, such as low temperatures which cause freezing or failure of wells or lines of pipe. Number 3. Interruption of firm transportation and or storage by transporters. Number 4. Acts of others such as strikes, lockouts or other industrial disturbances, riots, sabotage, insurrections or wars. And number 5. Governmental actions such as necessity for compliance with any court order, law, statute, ordinance, or regulation promulgated by a governmental authority having jurisdiction. Seller and buyer shall make reasonable efforts to avoid the adverse impacts of a force majeure and to resolve the event or occurrence once it has occurred in order to resume performance. 11.3. Neither party shall be entitled to the benefit of the provisions of force majeure to the extent performance is affected by any or all of the following circumstances. Number 1. The curtailment of interruptible or secondary firm transportation unless primary, in path, firm transportation is also curtailed. Number 2. The party claiming excuse failed to remedy the condition and to resume the performance of such covenants or obligations with reasonable dispatch. Or number 3. Economic hardship. The party claiming force majeure shall not be excused from its responsibility for imbalance charges. Section 11.1 sets you up for being off the hook for any damages or liability if force majeure exists. Section 11.2 says what force majeure means. Section 11.3 names the exclusions from being able to claim force majeure, along with the exception to one of the exclusions. Welcome to the complicated world of NASB. Notice that it doesn't say anything about the price of the gas, except indirectly in Section 11.3, which excludes economic hardship as a reason for not performing. In other words, if your gas is unexpectedly worth $200 per million BTU versus the $3 you expected, you can't claim force majeure to pull it from a fixed-price customer and sell it elsewhere. And if you're committed to buy a volume at the index price and totally against your expectations, the index price goes from $3 to $200, you can't claim force majeure and stiff the seller. These situations are jokingly called price majeure and nothing like that exists in the base contract, or anywhere else for that matter. While a lot of weather-related impacts, including freeze-offs, really do constitute force majeure, that doesn't settle many of the issues surrounding Winter Storm Uri. For example, consider what it says in the last sentence of paragraph 11.2. Seller and buyer shall make reasonable efforts to avoid the adverse impacts of a force majeure and to resolve the event or occurrence once it has occurred in order to resume performance. This provision creates an obligation for parties to a contract to find other ways to honor a firm agreement if there is any way to reasonably do so. Suffice to say that the definition of what is reasonable is very fertile ground for attorneys. Another example has to do with whether a contract is firm or not. Although there is a specific definition for what makes a contract firm in the base contract, it is worth noting that any volume nominated and confirmed for delivery is automatically firm for the time covered by the nomination and confirmation. In other words, arguing that my contract is kind of mushy and its firmness wouldn't work very well if the confirmations have happened. To the extent there's any ambiguity, any need for interpretation when no regulator has blessed or interpreted the standard contract, where can you go to get things sorted out? Well, NASB, having been created to support a regulatory function, is a very careful, thorough organization. They have a lot of meetings and a lot of records. So, whether you read it yourself, have someone else read it for you, or ask the NASB staff for help, there is a good record as to where each provision came from, and sometimes why it's there. Unfortunately, while records on the force majeure provision are very thorough and accessible for the more than 20 years since GISB became NASB, the records for the first 5 years of the organization's existence as GISB takes some personal help from the staff, and that's when most of the important discussion around the provision happened. It can take some expertise in NASB history and a good relationship with their excellent and helpful staff to get back to the beginning. Members of the RBN team have been deeply involved with NASB. Since the original formation of GISB for a couple of us, we've had members on the board of directors, and we still act as an advisor to the organization. If you want to track the meaning of something like the base contract, which goes back a quarter of a century with many reviews in between, be prepared to read a lot of meeting minutes and be sure to get a volume discount on Red Bull. Otherwise, you'll fall asleep on your keyboard and type a lot of Z's. What if your experience with the base contract makes you wish it said something a little different? You want to participate in potential changes to something like the base contract? A couple of cautionary hints are in order. First, we'd suggest you become a NASB member. It's really a good idea for any participant in gas or electric markets, because you can influence the rules and stay very current. Second, we'd suggest patience. It takes time for things to get done. You need board approval of an annual work plan, referral to the executive committee for execution, and many meetings to reach consensus. Then, for working participation, be prepared to listen to groups of people argue for hours at a time about where a comma goes. That sort of detail is critical to meaning, but it can be painful to watch the detail being worked out. NASB has streamlined both the gas and electric industries in many ways, primarily through regulatory work. And it has massively streamlined transactions around the gas commodity, so its value can't be overstated. This has created an importance around its standards words and has been shown across the gas industry since Winter Storm Uri, affecting many millions of dollars. That does not mean you should innocently wander into a NASB meeting unless you're willing to really dive into the details. RBN's oil and gas advisory services specialize in helping clients navigate issues surrounding pipeline rates, recontracting, strategy, and litigation. Call Me Maybe was written by Carly Rae Jepsen, Tavish Crowe, and Josh Ramsey. It appears as the first song on Carly Rae Jepsen's second EP, the sixth song Curiosity. Released as a single in September 2011, it went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart and has been certified diamond by the Recording Industry Association of America. The song later appeared as the third song on Jepsen's second studio album, Kiss. Personnel on the record were Carly Rae Jepsen on vocals, Tavish Crowe on guitar, bass, drums, synthesizer, and backing vocals, and Josh Ramsey on guitar, bass, drums, synthesizer, sampling, and backing vocals. Curiosity was produced by Josh Ramsey and Ryan Stewart. Released in February 2012, it went to number 6 on the Canadian Albums Chart. Two singles were released from the EP. Kiss was the first internationally released studio album by Jepsen. Finished in August 2012, the LP was recorded at a long list of studios: Second Floor, Beer Brothers, Boiler Room, Dark Focus, Kite London, Hippo Sonic, MXM, Pigzilla Sound Labs, Party Rock, Pulse Recording, Signal Path, Sky Harbor, Nightbird Recording, The Terrarium, Triangle Sound, West, and Umbrella. It was produced by Josh Abraham, Klaus Olland, Alice Austin, Justin Bieber, Scooter Braun, Corey Enemy, Toby Gadd, Jordan Gatsby, Goon Rock, Kook Harrell, Lucas Hilbert, Colin Jans, Matthew Coma, Max Martin, Mighty Mike Olajé, Josh Ramsey, Red Fu, Jonathan Simkin, Ryan Stewart, and Adam Young. Released in September 2012, the album went to number 6 on the Billboard 200 Albums chart. Four singles were released from the LP. Carly Rae Jepsen is a Canadian singer, songwriter, and actress. She was discovered after placing third in the fifth season of Canadian Idol in 2007. She has released 5 studio albums, 4 EPs, and 26 singles and has sold over 25 million records worldwide. Jepsen has appeared in 7 television shows, 2 movies, and 1 Broadway play. She continues to record and tour.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.